So I think that the biggest challenges overall were just how do you continue to grow in a small town like this and in a rural school district, and how do we provide opportunities for our students to succeed in a wide variety of things. One of the things that we've been pretty big on is the redefining READY movement and finding different ways of measuring success at a school. It doesn't all come down to the ACT. The ACT for us, so it is an important test, and we have college-bound kids and kids who do well on the ACT and do well in college. We need to prepare those students for that, but we also have people that go into the trades, people that go into the military, the workforce, and we want to make sure that we have a well-rounded approach to preparing kids for all different pathways within their careers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my guest today is Jason Gorst. Jason is the superintendent of Spencer School District in Spencer, Wisconsin. Jason, thanks for being here today. It's so good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate the opportunity today.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on in Spencer.
Sure. Well, I've been, I give a little bit of background here. So I've been fortunate to have spent my entire 19-year educational career here. I taught social studies for 10 years, was a principal for 8, and now in my first year as a superintendent. We are a small rural school, about 650 kids, pre-K through 12, all in one building, town of about 2,000 people in central Wisconsin. Overall, it's a small town feel. It's kind of like a family type feel here at our school district. And I've spent a lot of time here, and coming into this role, you know, wanted to come in and, you know, keep the ball rolling on a lot of the positive things we have going. Obviously, if I've stayed here this long, I feel good about what's going on, but also looking
for sure
at, well, how can we look at new directions and keep things going that we had going already? So.
You said before we started that you've got some strategic planning initiatives. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing.
Sure. So I learned a lot from my predecessor, Mike Endres. He was a fantastic superintendent for a number of years. And one of the things that he always taught me was you always need to be looking around the curve as a school district. And you know, other kind of catchphrases, if you're standing still, you're moving backwards. You have to be moving forward. And so to build off of all of the success he had and the district had, we looked at different ways with me coming in my first year in this role of how do we perpetuate that and continue to take things forward. And we thought that going through a strategic planning initiative could be one of those things to help solidify that, you know, the future mindset, the way our district has done things, but to get some things down on paper, engage with the community and go through a process of engaging with community stakeholders to talk about what is important to them, to talk to our staff, what is important to them, try to bring all the worlds together and create a plan of different areas, themes, action steps, et cetera.
Very cool. Very cool. So so it was something that was kind of in place, but you have been implementing it. Is that right? Is that what I understand?
Yeah, essentially, like I say, I think we've always been a forward-thinking district.
Yeah.
And just wanted to formalize that process a little bit. So we had reached out to a couple of companies to help facilitate these things. We ended up settling on Nexus as a company that helped us facilitate the process. And we went through a series of meetings over the course of about a half of a year, 5 or 6 months. We created a community task force of a total, it was 44 community members and staff together, 27 of that coming from non-employees, so parents, community business owners, those sorts of things, former students in some cases. So we created this task force and got together about once a month over the course of this time to further understand and have conversation about what does the community value, what does the school value, and then to start setting goals and action steps around those values that we brought out from the community.
So what have you identified as your biggest challenges then?
So I think the biggest challenges overall were just how do you continue to, you know, grow in a small town like this and in a rural school district, and how do we provide opportunities for our students to succeed in a wide variety of things. One of the things that we've been pretty big on is the redefining READY movement and in finding different ways of measuring success in a school. it doesn't all come down to the ACT. The ACT for us, it is an important test, and we have college-bound kids and kids who do well on the ACT and do well in college. We need to prepare those students for that. But we also have people that go into the trades, people that go into the military, the workforce, and we want to make sure that we have a well-rounded approach to preparing kids for all different pathways within their careers.
So have you developed different pathways for students? I'll back up one step and say, if this is a theme I'm hearing a lot, which is fantastic. I'm 57, so I graduated in the 80s. Everybody was going to go to college. That was what you did. You graduated from high school, you went to college. And if you didn't go to college, you weren't going to make it in the world, right? I mean, that was, and nothing, not that I'm slamming on the educators I had, because I had amazing ones. I don't want people to think that I'm, but it's just a mindset. And that mindset now that I'm hearing is, and rightfully so, the world is shifting. And so we are, as educators, having to shift with it. So I love the fact that educators are doing that, but how specific, how are you doing that for your students in the overall grand scheme of things?
Yeah, that really came to be we wound up with five themes of the whole plan.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm.
We call college, career, and life readiness. And to get into the specifics of that, we do still have all of the different college pathways with your advanced math and science courses, mm-hmm. and college credits and AP and those sorts of things. And we didn't want to take away any of that. But things that we have consistently over the course of years continue to build would be like our dual credit courses, where students can earn credit here at the high school, but also through the local technical college as well. We've done a lot with our career and technical education program. Our school counselors are very involved in academic and career planning, ACP. And so the idea that we want to really implement here is that we are going to provide a wide variety of opportunities for students, for them to make choices as far as what do they want to be when they grow up, and just try to give them as many tools as they can, give them a menu of the different options, if you will, a high emphasis on field trips, getting people out onto job sites and meeting with companies, participating in those career exploration events, and just trying to provide those opportunities for students, and then align our courses along with trades needs, industry needs, whatever it might be, so that students are walking out prepared for whatever their next step is.
So when you talk about, let's talk a little bit about community leaders, because I think that is, I've heard other people have said, that's one thing that they've really, really tried to do, but it's also an uphill battle sometimes. So what kinds of things have you done to, I know you said you had a company and all of that, but what helps bring them to the table so that, for other people that are listening to this, what kind of nuggets can you give them as far as like getting your community members and your community leaders involved in what's happening with your school?
I think with the way we assembled our task force, we put some ads in the paper, we got it out on social media, email blasts, whatever, and just tried to create a little bit of buzz about it for a month or two before we launched. And we were initially aiming to get to about 30 or 35 people. We wound up with 44. And I looked at the list. I didn't want to cut anybody on the list. And we had some critics on that list, people who maybe haven't been 100% supporters of everything we did. And I said, I really want those people on this team. We want to hear from them. And then just the way we handled those meetings, with really allowing people to express their voice and allow them to be heard, and then to have them see that get put into action in different ways. I think that's the key that we're focusing on, is trying to deliver on that, so that it goes beyond just words and things that were expressed to us. But how can we follow through and deliver on that within the next 5 years?
Right. Yeah. And being a special education person as an SLP for 31 years, how does that translate into your special needs populations?
I think when we look at just preparing all students, we talk about what's best for students, your student first, and that is each and every individual student. And so working with our special education staff or our school psychologist, and look at, okay, so what type of job placements, are out there, and what type of skills do students need, and how can we help that along the way? It's something we feel very passionate about here. I think we have a fantastic special education department of some of the best and brightest in the profession. They do a really nice job with, looking at every kid as an individual, and what can we do to try to help prepare this student and to try to, you know, celebrate and build off of the talents and skills that they have to, you know, put them in a position to be set up for success.
Right. Yeah, that's fantastic. That is absolutely fantastic. And when do they start, like, with this program that you're talking about and the pathways? What age are they when they start, like, when you start looking at, or do they have to pick something, or is it just like we start introducing? When does that start to happen for your kids?
So I think that at a very low level in our elementary school, there are things that happen where there's just a little bit of introduction. There's guest speaker. Mm-hmm. Our elementary school is very involved with junior achievement. And then as you get into middle school, there's more of these academic career planning lessons that are put out there. Caters right into the high school. They work very closely with the counselors. At the end of the day, we want all of our students to choose a career cluster. So maybe it's not the job they want, but what field, what area, and understand that cluster and understand, well, what are your options within that? What are the things that those students can do to help prepare themselves? So kind of an ongoing process. One of the real neat things about our district being small and all in one building is you do get to see that progression of a student, you know, from four-year-old kindergarten on. And now we've even opened actually a daycare to help out with the community needs of that. So we have infant and toddler care right here within our school. So we could make the argument even, you know, from birth on, we're working with students to help prepare them.
Well, that is fantastic. I love that. I love that whole concept. And, you know, being able to, there's pros and cons for every situation, isn't there? So, you know, when you're in a small town versus, you know, someplace like Philadelphia or someplace like that. And it's amazing to see and to know that kids have that opportunity. Do you find that there are some pathways that are more popular than others? And do you think that's changing at all from what you've seen with your students?
I think so. We were just looking at the data of our current graduating class here, and it was 31% of them, I believe, are off to a four-year college. So just a little under a third of the class. And so you start looking at the number that are going into technical school routes and trades routes and whatnot. We are an agricultural community. So the FFA is a very big institution here, and the FFA alumni, and agriculture is a big part of our region and our area. So I think, you know, we're a little bit diverse. We're also right next to a town that has a pretty big hospital. And so a fair amount of the parents of the kids of our school, you know, work in the medical field. So we really do have kind of an eclectic, you know, balance of are you entering the trades? Are you going into the medical field? Are you off to college? Are you going to continue to work in the agricultural field? So kind of a balance. And as a small school, we want to make sure we're not putting all of our eggs in any one of those baskets per se. We want to try to, you know, to reach all kids if we can.
Yeah. Round peg, round hole, right? Instead of square. Yeah, for sure. That's fantastic. So if you had, this is a question I ask at the end of every podcast, and I want to make sure that I ask it of you. If you could, and you can't say money. Yeah, absolutely can't say. Everybody needs more money. I get that. If you could miraculously fix one thing in your realm, your sphere, you know, without any effort, what would that one thing be?
It fits into our staff area. And you maybe get into the money area a little bit there. But
yeah.
As a country, we've seen a shortage in workers.
Mm-hmm.
With more and more retirement. And then within the field of education, specifically here in Wisconsin, we have a teacher shortage.
Yeah.
And so it, you know, whatever we can do to get people to go into the field of education, I think it's an extremely rewarding field. And I look at our staff and the great staff we have, you know, we're constantly researching what are the best retainment strategies? How do we keep these people here? How do we keep people within the profession? That's the other scary part, is more and more people are leaving the field of education just a wholesale. And I hate to see that. So if there was any one thing I could do, it'd be to, you know, keep all of the great teachers we have and continue to recruit, you know, really high quality people into the field. Because I do think it's a rewarding profession. I think there's a lot of great things that come of it. And that would be, you know, my big concern, or, you know, if I could guarantee that, you know, I could fill this building, you know, for the next 20 years with a great staff and keep them here, that would be fantastic for our students. So I'd love to see people continue to go into the field of education.
Yeah. Yeah. And is that something that you're encouraging your students as well? Is that one of, in that pathway that you have, is their education a part of that? I can see us going, let's train them, you know, let's train them to be educators, right?
Yeah, we are. We've had a class that's run on and off here that is kind of a foundations of education class. Mm-hmm. We actually offer a scholarship that's a grow your own scholarship that students can apply for and come back and work here with a small consortium of similar schools. So yeah, there are steps that we're taking and we have hired people back. I mean, we talk about the Rocket family, we're the Rockets here, and the term Rocket family, that's something, you know, Mike Enders, my predecessor, talked a ton about. That's all over the place here. And, we do hire a lot of people back, you know, former students and then whatnot that come back and like the environment. So I do think that's something we have to be forward thinking and as educators sometimes, and, you know, making sure that we are trying to inspire that next generation of young people to go into the profession.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It is. And you know, it's something that, I've also been, I'll tell you, doing this podcast has helped me to see what's happening. And I was talking to a gentleman yesterday, if I can even think of his, it was Eric Hopstock. He's also on the board of CASE. And he was talking about they have a registered apprenticeship that they're using, and they've, I don't remember the specific name of it. And if Mark was here, he would give it to me, but it was impressive. And it's like all over the state of Michigan now. And they're helping paras and people that are interested in growing in education to get a degree in education. And I was like, you know, it sounds real similar to what you guys are doing in teaching, you know. And he was saying they have some that are in high school, that high schoolers that are taking that path. And, you know, everybody says, what is the one thing that is keeping you from, you know, going further in education? And everybody, you know, not resoundingly, it's cost, right? The cost of education just keeps going up and up and up. And so they've found a way to partner with their universities. And I was like, what a great idea, you know. And it kind of, he was saying it really grew beyond just the two people that had the idea and started it. And it's similar to what you were just talking about. Let's get more people in this profession and people that love the kids, because there are a lot of really good people. But if you can't finish, and you know, the other thing he was saying too was, you know, going, being able to keep your job while you're getting your degree. So it has to be after school and evening and weekend hours and all of that. So, and I can totally relate to that, because when I finally figured out what the heck I wanted to do, I went to school full time and I worked full time because I just had to. Yeah. I would left the nest, wasn't at home anymore. I was 2,000 miles away from my parents, and it wasn't like you can just, you know, hop. And that was before cell phones and before all of the, you know, the internet. I remember the internet being a thing in 94. I graduated with my master's in 94. And I remember my first job, because you have to do a clinical fellowship year as a speech language pathologist. And I remember them talking about this thing called the internet. And I was like, oh, what's that? You know? And that's 30 years ago. But you think about 30 years versus the grand scheme of history, so fast things are changing, and I just think it's not going to stop, right?
No, with AI coming onto the scene here, I really think it's going to continue to spin faster and faster.
Yeah, hopefully for the good. And I think as educators, we will find ways to make it good.
Absolutely.
For sure. So, well, Jason, excellent conversation. Thank you so much for your time. Keep up the good work. The school district obviously is blessed to have you there for the longevity and for what you're doing. So I'm excited for this podcast to come out so people can hear the great things you guys are doing.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on today. Really appreciated the conversation.
Yeah. And one last thing, where do they go? I didn't give you that opportunity. I want to make sure I give you that opportunity. Where can people go to learn a little bit more about you and the school? I don't want to step away without that.
Probably our website, which is spencer.k12.wi.us. If you look up Spencer School District in Wisconsin, it would pop up. Other than that, we do a lot on our Facebook page as well. So School District of Spencer.
Fantastic. Thank you again for being on the Brighter Together podcast, because we really are brighter together.
Absolutely.